Paul, you got me thinking about all the things we used to do out on the building site. I mean, it's fun to be able to get with somebody that's about my same age that can think back that far and think, wow. The building sciences has really come a long, long ways, in particular in the last 20, 25 years.
Correct.
What are some of the things y'all have seen in roofing?
Well, I got to tell you, the detail work on the tile roofs, we see so many tile roofs, but now when you see a re-roof on a tile roof, you see the bird stop, you see the metal eave changes, your roof-to-wall metals. Before, they didn't have that, you know. It was like probably in the last 14 years, now you're getting your correct J-pans and your valley rib were the two.
We used to just cut strips of 90-pound and bend it and squeeze it and squish it and goop it all up and stuff it in the hole.
Correct. So that's where we've come now. And then also on our flat roof situations with the polyurethane foam, your foam systems, your coatings have come a long way. We were talking before about silicone coatings versus elastomeric. There's another change that has come along.
I don't have a lot of experience with the silicone. Is that something that's easy enough to handle? It could be a do-it-yourself product. It's a little complicated, isn't it?
It's a little
tricky.
It's a little complicated. It's more of a commercial type of application than it is a residential application. So it is a little bit harder to put on it, you know, when it should be sprayed on. You could roll it on also, but again, it's the same idea. You want to spray it on thinner than it is thicker. You'd rather have a couple of coats of it.
Okay. Well, let's take Corey real quick. He has an insulation question, but he's been on hold very patiently. We'll take his question real quick and get back to roofing. Good morning, Corey. Welcome to Rosie on the House.
Hey, good morning, Rose. Thanks for taking my call, sir.
You bet.
Hey, I was just, there was a couple weeks back, I heard you talking about something about a return on investment on getting your roof or your attic insulated, and that it's only about 10%. I don't remember if this is exact, the numbers you said, but if you could go over that one more time, because I got a buddy of mine that's considering doing that, and I was trying to explain to him, reciprocate what you said, but I didn't remember everything. So if you could just go over that, you know, whether you'd recommend it or not to recommend it.
Well, the thing about attic temperature is it scares people so much because it gets so hot up there, 150, 160 plus, and they're thinking, gosh, it cost me so much in my air conditioning bill. And it doesn't. If you're properly insulated to an R30 or an R38 in the middle of the summer, when your attic is 160 degrees and you've got your thermostat in the house turned to 76, it only impacts your air conditioning bill 10%. That means it only impacts your electric bill 5%. So if you've got a $200 air conditioning cooling bill in the middle of the summer, the heat in the attic is only costing you $10 a month. But yet I know people that will spend thousands of dollars on radiant barriers or over insulating the attic. That isn't the problem. The windows and the doors are the problem. Okay. And remember this, never power ventilate your attic. Because as soon as you create a negative pressure in the attic, it's going to be sucking air out of your house through the recessed cans, through the bathroom exhaust vents. So, yes, it will drop the temperature of your attic, but it does that by sucking the air conditioning out of the air inside your house, which you've already paid to cool. So there's no return on investment for that. All right? Plenty of studies to substantiate that. Don't over-insulate. R30 or R38 installed correctly. Only passive ventilate your attic. Don't actively with a motor or a fan or a pump of any type, and you'll be all set. And there is a place for radiant barriers, but I promise you, it's not in your attic, and it's not at your house. Okay? So there, put it to rest. Let's get back to roofing with Paul Lanoux of Lyons Roofing. We've talked about some of the mistakes we've made in roofing. One thing we didn't cover that I want to cover, is it ever appropriate on the desert floor to install wood shake shingles on a house? That seems insane to me.
It does seem insane, but it is a beautiful roof. It is a well-insulated roof. And the drawback is the new generation of wood is not as good as it was. I mean, we've all seen cedar shake roofs been up on the house 50 years or so. The new wood is not going to be as hardy as the old one, even your number one cedar shakes.
You still can get the three-quarter inch thick shake that's almost 2 feet long, tapers down to an eighth inch?
Correct.
And what do those cost right now?
They're ridiculous. The cost is just over the top. But if you have to have a shake roof, it is a great insulated roof. It looks good. The drawback, again, your ridges, you're going to have to redo at about 12 to 15 years. So there's going to be a little bit color variance on the ridges and such. But other than that, we probably do about 4 or 5 shake roofs a year.
You do? Mm-hmm. I didn't even know a wholesaler still shipped that material to the Southwest.
They still do.
Oh, man. I see a shake roof and I just think fire. Especially how many times we were told through the 60s and 70s to put penetrating oil on those, right?
Right. Right.
Let's make it more of a fire hazard.
Yeah, more of a fire hazard, exactly. And you do get a discount if you convert over from a cedar shake roof to an asphalt or a tile roof. There is a savings for your homeowner's insurance.
Yeah, the homeowner's insurance company loves to see you make that trade. So we did tell people a lot of times with those roofs that when you're painting, every time you're painting your house, have the roofer or have the painter get some linseed oil and spray the shingles. And that even ended up being the wrong information.
Correct. You got a blotchy-looking roof, and then the oils clogged up the pores of the wood. It couldn't breathe.
Dripped down the face of the fascia.
Yeah. So it was more of an accident waiting to happen.
With a wood shake, rather than oil it, what you need to do is you need to install a sprinkler system on your roof. Right, Rhonda? And you just need to turn the sprinklers on and get them wet about every 2 to 3 months.
Correct. Especially like when we haven't had rain like this in 100 days or so, you definitely do want to go up there and hose it down. It just expands the wood. It's natural.
I like the idea of sprinklers on the roof just so that it can look like it's raining.
Just so it can look and feel like rain, that's for sure. So, okay. Y'all operate in Phoenix. Y'all operate in Tucson. What are the differences in the roofing market between those two communities?
Boy, quite a bit.
It's amazing how different it is.
It's completely different. Yes, a lot of low slope roofing in Tucson area. Here it's a little bit different. So hot asphalt roofs in a lot of coating. Some people say Tucson is like the coating capital of the world. They just keep coating every roof forever.
I know a roofing company down there that's been in business, I think, over 40 years, and they've never installed a roof. All they do is patch, repair, and coat. And they're very successful. They're very good at it. But it is the coating capital of the world.
It is. And they're trying to reflect as much. I mean, the heat is what we're all trying to get some insulation comfort out of it. And the idea is the white is going to reflect the ultraviolet rays and help you out.
When I bought my house at 4th and Alvernon in Tucson, I had to pay the roofing contractor from Phoenix. Now, this is a long time ago, to go down there and spray foam it. And every one of my neighbors looked at me and said, "What are you doing?" I mean, foam never did catch on down there.
It never caught on, but it was because the foam was not up to, it wasn't the same quality as it is today.
When foam came into the market in the 80s?
Correct.
We had some early failures in Tucson?
Correct.
And man, they never were willing to give it a second chance until recently.
Never gave it a second chance. We've been there now, I want to say, 6-7 years, and it's been a slow transition. But there's two other roofers now that do foam. you know, from the valley that are up there. So there's more competition the more the people get educated to the efficiencies.
I love foam on low slope roofs and on behind the backs of parapets. It self flashes. It sticks to everything. Installed correctly, and people ask me, what should the surface look like? And I tell them it ought to look like about the surface of a basketball. If it looks like a bowl of scrambled eggs, that's wrong. it needs to be, you know, and it's all the guy on the trigger.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is very...
temperamental.
Very temperamental, and the application, the applicator, and the actual system, your mechanics of how it's heated has to be dialed in just correctly to get a good foam roof on.
It's really a lot to it, because even the applicator can't drip sweat onto the surface. How do you do that?
Very difficult. They're wearing a little hoodie, but every drop that he sweats down there will be a little itty-bitty blister.
Yeah. It's absolutely incredible. Well, listen, Taylor's on the line here. He wants to visit with us about something I'm not familiar with. He's calling it a TPO roof, okay? Taylor, welcome to Rosie on the House. Let me introduce you to Paul Lanoux, owner of Lyons Roofing. What's your roofing question? Taylor, we got everybody listening on the radio. Nobody's listening on their phone this morning.
Yeah, and there's a little delay here, too, okay. So.
Taylor, are you there?
Going once?
While we're waiting for Taylor, Paul, what's a TPO roof?
Well, it's basically like a rubber roof, a rubberized type of roof. It's a single ply, very thin type of roof. They're using it more and more like on patio type of roofs. It's basically a commercial application. Again, with the building envelope that we have here with your parapet walls and your edge details, it's a very difficult roof to construct. And then you also have to add the insulation, because we're looking at, you know, 55, 60 mils of
roofing
product that goes on.
Is that a torch down?
No, it's not a torch down.
Is it a nail down?
It's heat welded.
Okay.
It's heat welded.
And so his question in particular, Taylor, you haven't come to the phone yet, have you? Taylor, going once, going twice. Hello, hello, hello. His question was, what is the maintenance needed on it once it's down?
Well, it depends. When you first put it down, you really don't need a coating, but you could coat that roof with the right product. Again, you have to open up the pores of the TPO to accept the coating properly. But there is no maintenance other than that, other than, you know, depending on where it's at, tree trimmers come in, they poke through the roof. You're looking at basically a patch on the roof.
There you go. Paul Lanoux with his wife, Rhonda, owners of Lyons Roofing. Again, the earliest Rosie certified roofer in the state of Arizona, operating in Phoenix as well as in Tucson. We'll be back wrapping up our topic of roofing right after this.